Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Glenn is not going to like this. Rob Cherry in for Glenn Mack now today with Mike Sielski for a Saturday morning. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. Good to be here with you.
It's now we've never worked together, but you've been a guest on shows I've been on. Like
that is correct.
The morning show this week.
That is correct.
There is so much going on right now. It's unbelievable.
It's a great time of year. It really is. You know, college football is starting again. We got the NFL on the horizon. The Phillies are treating September so far like they've treated the last few Septembers. It's pretty cool.
That's what I wanted to start with, is the Phillies, because what it was scary what happened last night.
You know, going into that road trip that they're on now on the West Coast, Glenn and I had talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You say to yourself, okay, they've basically got a month where they're not going to face a team that's over 500.
Except for the Braves at some point.
Right, yeah. In the middle of September. So you should be able to solidify yourself in the playoff race, maybe put some distance between yourself and the San Diego Padres, kind of solidify that second wild card, maybe even chase the Braves if you have delusions of grandeur. And you lose two out of three to the Diamondbacks. You come into San Francisco and get blown out 13-1. And this is three out of the last four games that they've surrendered double-digit runs. This is insane.
And their starting pitching has been brutal. So here's how last night went for me. I'm not sure how it went for you. There was a riveting tennis match between Serena Williams and what was her opponent's name?
Isla Tomljanovic.
At this point, it doesn't matter who it is because everybody's rooting against her.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad for whoever's playing them, but I think they're even rooting for Serena.
I heard somebody describe the last two matches that Serena played. Anytime one of her opponents would get a point, there was a golf clap in Arthur Ashe Stadium. And that's true. I mean, the crowds were so partisan for Serena, and understandably so. It's probably the last time she'll play in the U.S. Open. She's nearing retirement. The sentiment is there, and that's the way that crowd at that event acts. We've seen it in the past with Jimmy Connors and other people like that.
If you walk out of the room, which I did several times during there, it was a long, it was like close to 3 hours, I think. You walk out of the room, you hear applause, wild applause, you know that Serena won. If you hear, you know, the golf clap, it's the other girl wins a point. And, you know, everybody was acknowledging how great she is and appreciates her greatness, even those who are tired. I mean, when somebody wins a lot, at times you get tired. It's like, well, let's get somebody new in here.
Yeah.
No matter who it is.
Yeah, that's true. But the flip side of that is that the lion and winner coming back to make a charge late in his or her career is one of the most compelling stories in sports. You know, the idea of Tom Brady, I know he's a villain around here, I get that. But to have him win another Super Bowl with the Buccaneers, there's something interesting and dramatic about that.
It's a story. It's a story that everybody sort of can relate to. It's like, well, this person was supposed to be washed up, supposed to retire, whatever, and they're still out there doing what they're doing.
There's a reason that Top Gun Maverick has made a bazillion dollars in theaters this summer. Part of it is for that reason. I think it's Tom Cruise and the character. Like, he's old. Is he still an ace kind of thing? And if you've seen that movie, it's a very dramatic storyline. I think we, as a society, kind of like that narrative.
No, I didn't see every second of the match, but I understand Ben Simmons' picture came up on the video board, big board.
Apparently the only boos that have taken place in the entire tournament. You know, it didn't take him long up there in Brooklyn to kind of reveal what we had seen in Philadelphia since his time joining the Sixers.
They asked him to play in game four. Are you ready? And he said no.
No. No.
Didn't even want to be on their little team meeting or whatever.
It's funny. I'll listen sometimes to people on TV, you know, national NBA coverage, whether it's ESPN or Fox Sports, things like that. And you hear people say things like, well, if, you know, look at the Nets. if you have Kevin Durant and if Kyrie Irving gets his head right and if Ben Simmons is there, Ben Simmons isn't going to have to take any jump shots if you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. It's kind of like, you know, at some point, folks, you have to evaluate what you're seeing regularly from this team. And the idea that the Brooklyn Nets are going to be a team to be reckoned with just strikes me as kind of, you know, pie in the sky, ridiculous thing.
Doesn't Ben Simmons still have a high ceiling if he ever devotes himself to learning how to shoot or practicing shooting?
I don't know, Rob. I really don't. I mean, in theory, yes, but he hasn't done it yet. I mean,
but he's only 26 years old?
Yeah. I mean, but everybody knew this thing about him and has right. known this thing about him for years. I can remember talking to his father before Game 6 of the Sixers-Raptors series back in 2019 at the Wells Fargo Center, and I asked Dave Simmons point blank, what about the fact that Ben won't shoot? And his father said, don't worry about it. He's 22. He's 23. He's young. Just enjoy it. It's such an honor that he gets to guard Kawhi Leonard in this series. And I was kind of like, okay, I guess. And he's made no progress, and if anything, regressed since then.
And Kawhi Leonard hit that shot over Ben Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah, and Joel Embiid. So it's, yeah, here we are.
Well, the most damning thing I ever heard him say, and it was, I think there were only a few reporters around, I don't know if it was a practice or whatever, but they asked him what if he needed to work on his shooting in the offseason, whatever, something like that. And his response was, I'm an all-star.
Yeah, yeah, that's our friend Jack McCaffrey from the Delco Times.
I'm an all-star yeah. is his response to you need to work on my shooting.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, look, he's a different cat in that, you know, I think he's... And I actually wrote a column about this in the Inquirer a couple of weeks ago. Like, he's a case study in, like, there were red flags all over the place with him, but it became conventional wisdom to think, well, they don't matter or they won't matter, and here's why he should be the first pick in the draft. And it became very easy to overlook the fact that, for instance, LSU took a step backward with him from the previous season, or that he would score a lot of points and collect a lot of rebounds and LSU would still lose. Or that in Australia, he wasn't playing against a really high level of competition compared to, say, the AAU and high school and college teams that kids who were born and grow up in the States do. So, you know, you get this kind of collective narrative of, well, he's going to be the first pick in the draft because everybody says he's going to be the first pick in the draft and that he should be. And then you end up with these weaknesses that never get corrected. And only in hindsight can you look back and say, oh, well, we should have seen this coming.
Well, who knew that his work ethic would be like, I'll work on everything else, but I won't work on this.
Right, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. It was the one thing. And you know, you wonder about him from that mental health standpoint. I know we're all skeptical, and rightly so, of it. But there's clearly something there where he does not want to shoot the ball. And that's a
mental health thing.
Yeah.
That's something that's mental if you're not wanting to shoot.
It's Steve Sachs' disease of basketball.
Which very few people, and we've seen it with guys shooting free throws.
Right.
We generally don't see it with guys shooting jump shots.
Right. Yeah, that's 100% right. But, I mean, and that's the thing, right? It's anybody, any layperson watching a basketball game can see Ben Simmons and see his speed, see the way he handles the ball, see the way he passes the ball, and say, boy, if he only would shoot the ball, imagine the player he would be. And that's what I think at its core frustrated so many people during his tenure here, was you can see how great he will become, could become, and he's not tapping into that, and he seemingly just refuses to do so.
He has four superior skills. It's mm-hmm. the fifth that he just doesn't want to work
on. Yeah, it's a shame.
All right, so anyway, so he gets booed at the Open. The Open ends, and I don't know, but I stayed around for the interviews because I wanted to hear what Serena had to say. I actually wanted to hear what her opponent had to say about Serena because it was so fascinating.
I didn't stay for that. I'm down the shore this weekend in Sea Isle City. My kids were in bed. I needed to get to bed. So I didn't stay for the interviews. Were they compelling?
Yeah, I mean, Serena, to me, at this point of her career, or at the end of her career, just to hear what what an athlete has to say about the end and hear her thank all these different people, it's just, and you've never seen, you haven't seen the movie about King Richard.
No, I haven't.
Which was a fascinating movie. Mm-hmm. Just to hear, like, the end of her career, to me, it's like, it's a historical thing.
Yeah, the one thing I did hear her say was that she thanked Venus for her role in Serena's success, which was really touching to me, you know, that I have two sons and I want them to be close. I want them to be best friends. And the fact that Serena and Venus seem to have that relationship, which is not necessarily an easy thing, given that Serena, the younger sister, eclipsed the older sister as a player. That touched me to hear her say that.
Yeah, it was a very touching. And she obviously was, Serena was emotional, but then they go to Venus and she's not. I'm like, well, there's got to be a reason behind that.
Mm. Maybe she just knows the cameras are on her and she's trying not to take from her sister's moment.
That could be. So anyway, so that ends, and the Phillies game is on. So and it's on Apple TV, which is not the easiest thing to find.
No.
You have to either have Apple TV, have to have a laptop or Mac or whatever. So I turned that on, and it's 4-0 already.
Ooh.
And then it's 7-0. Jock Peterson hits a 3-run homer. And then it's like, what the hell is going on with this team?
Yeah. Pitching. And the irony of this is that people seem to think, and justifiably so, that that would be a strength for the Phillies coming down the stretch.
Starting pitching.
You had Wheeler and Nola.
And Suarez.
And Rangers have been a solid number three starter. And Dave Dombrowski had fortified the bullpen. He had gone out and gotten David Robertson. And you thought, okay, he got Noah Syndergaard, you know, who may or may not start a game in the playoffs, assuming the Phillies get there. But at least he can help you get there every fifth or sixth day.
And he looked solid, except for the last game. He's looked solid in all of his starts.
Yeah. And now they've just hit this patch, you know, the first two games of the Diamondbacks series and last night against the Giants, where it might as well be slow pitch softball out there. It is scary.
So is this the beginning of the end? Or was last night confirmation that, you know, this is it? This is where they're headed right now. We're going to get another September where we're disappointed.
I think everybody is, you know, cynical about this, and justifiably so. The Phillies have not been good the last three or four Septembers. You know, you go back to 2018 when the guy who beat them last night, Gabe Kapler, was their manager.
They were like 14 games over 500 in the summer, and then by September, it was starting to fall apart.
Yeah, it really was. And they were, what, 14-16, I think, in September and October last year. Got swept by the Braves in that critical series where, even though Bryce Harper was rightly the MVP, he didn't hit in that one series, and it kind of hurt a little bit. Not to take anything away from the season he had, but, you know, that was the most important series of the season. I mean, I think it's fair to say to the Phillies, you got to show us, guys. You know, yeah, a number of you haven't been here the last few years, Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, guys like that, but the most of you have, and it's time to play like you're in a pennant race and it doesn't bother you. Something seems to happen to this team come September.
Right, you mentioned Bryce Harper. I believe they were 32-20 or 33 and something like that when he was out.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to get better when he comes back. What I mean, seriously, yeah. What's happened?
Well, Castellanos missed a couple games with turf toe. And look, Bryce Harper can go up there and go 4-for-4 every night. If your pitchers are going to give up 13 runs each night, you're going to have a hard time winning games. So Rob Thompson said after last night's game, you know, this is a blip. We will get out of this. This is just one of those stretches in a baseball season where things go haywire and they'll eventually stabilize themselves again. Maybe he's right, but I can understand the anxiety that Phillies fans are feeling right now, because it looks like, at least after last night, oh my gosh, it's September and here we go again.
All right, I got to ask you about the pitching. Aaron Nola, obviously his last start was hideous.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody talks about September with it. Last year, it seemed like it was all throughout the season. Sprinkled throughout the season, he had games like that where he melted down. Is this it? Is this what he is now?
Look, there's an argument to be made that Aaron Nola is underrated. If you look at the totality of his career with the Phillies, that the number of innings he pitches, his ERA, his walks and hits per innings pitched, you know, the numbers that really count for a starting pitcher, generally compared to other starters in the National League, he's really, really good. But there's also no denying the fact that he has not pitched like an ace at any time during September when the team has been in contention. So, again, I would say the same thing about Nola that I say about the Phillies as a whole. It is on him and them to prove to the people who follow them that they are ready for prime time. And his last start brings all those questions back up. It just does.
But the baseball draft began in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the two best pitchers they've drafted, starting pitchers they've drafted, are Cole Hamels and Aaron Nola.
There you go.
In how many years is that? 57 years?
Yeah.
Those are the two best pitchers they've drafted.
Yeah.
Why can't this team draft pitchers?
I mean, look at their history. They have precious few periods where they draft well at all. You right. had, you know, the late 60s into the early 70s with Paul Owens and, you know, where they draft Schmidt and they get Boa.
Buzynski.
You know, yeah, that young core. And then you have the Mike Arbuckle era, you know, where he's leading the scouting staff and they're able to draft, you know, they draft Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard and Hamels, and you get Ryan Madsen and you find Carlos Ruiz, and before you know it, you're celebrating a World Series and five straight division titles. And it's been pretty barren, all things considered, since then. And look, Rob, this is a team that this season, a franchise, won its 10,000th game in its history.
And they've got over 11,000 losses.
They lost their 10,000th game 15 years ago.
We celebrated that. And that was before they won a World Series, before they got good.
Yeah.
Really good.
2007, they lost their 10,000th game. So the Phillies are what they are. I grew up as a kid loving them. I've covered them for a long time. Not as much the last couple of years, but there's a reason why people kind of look to the sky every September for the anvil that's going to fall on their head. And there's a lot of history in that regard, and I'm sure people are feeling it this morning, too.
My childhood as well, 1964, when they collapsed in late September. All right, so the last question I have about the Phillies is, why hasn't attendance matched the way they've played this season? Is it because Phil's fans are skeptics and waiting for the sky to fall in and waiting for them to actually prove themselves?
I think that's part of it. Glenn and I have batted this around a bit the last couple of weeks. I think that's part of it. I think, at least this past week, speaking as a parent, my two kids were starting school again, so getting them to, you know, activities and stuff outside of anything related to school was not a high priority. If the Phillies had been in town, I wouldn't have taken them to, you know, anywhere, let alone a Phillies game. I think cost is an issue. I saw a report a couple of weeks ago from a tech reporting firm that ranked the average cost of a family of four to go to a Major League Baseball game based on the stadium and the team that you'd go to see. And the Phillies were kind of in the middle of the pack, but it was more than $200 for the between right. the tickets and parking and food and drinks and all of that stuff. So, and I do think your point is well taken, that there's skepticism. It is, okay, you know, we're not quite there yet. And the final wild card, I think, is that one of the big reasons that the 07 to 2011 teams were loved as much as they were was that their very best players were homegrown players. And Bryce Harper, people love him, but he's not a homegrown Philly. They didn't watch him grow up, so to speak. And I think that in baseball, that matters. I think it does.
So the fact that he's from Washington, even though Washington won a championship after he left, the fact that we hated him for a while, we can't, because Pete Rose came here in 1979, I guess it was. And look, we hated him as a Red. Mm-hmm. Dykstra came here and loved him as a Philly. Loved both these guys as a Philly. There's no love. And he got a standing O his first mm-hmm. week here. And
yeah, I'm not saying people don't love Bryce Harper. I'm just saying that those teams, the two Phillies teams that won championships, the 80 team and the 2008 team, people could grow up with those teams in a way that they haven't been able to with these teams now. The Phillies went out and said, we're going to spend a lot of money and get some guys who can hit, and Zach Wheeler. And that's what they've done. And if I'm not saying that if they get to the playoffs, people won't be excited and all of that. But I am saying that there's something different about a team where you can watch, ooh, who's this kid, Ryan Howard? He's been hitting home runs in the minor leagues, and now he's up here. Chase Utley was the first round pick, and oh my gosh, his first major league hit is a grand slam. There's something kind of magical and sentimental about having a team that's great, built around guys who you saw come up when they were young.
Yet we loved Jim Thome right away.
Oh, yeah.
People loved Jim Thome right away.
Yeah, but it was hard not to. A really good guy.
Yeah,
really
and work guy. Ethic and all that stuff. So anyway, we'll get some Phillies conversation going. When we come back also, we're going to talk some Eagles and throw some things about the Eagles.
Who start in
8 days?
Yeah. Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
In Detroit. And there's questions about the Eagles, but there's a lot of answers as well.
Yeah, there are. I think they should be pretty good.
All right, Rob Cherry in for Glenn Mack.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
5592-9494, Rob Cherry in for Glenn Mack now with Mike Sielski this morning. So we're talking about the Phillies who play in San Francisco this afternoon. The second of their three-game series against Gabe Kapler. So they're 1-3.
Yeah.
On this West Coast road trip.
Yeah, not good.
Western road trip. No, it's not. And this was the trip where you thought, well, if there's going to be any hiccups along the way in September, this might be it.
Well, you did and you didn't, because they were playing five series in a row. And the combined records as of last week with those five teams was something like 99 games under 500. So you thought, you know, okay, they're beating up on Cincinnati and Pittsburgh at home. Then they got to go on the road and face the Diamondbacks, who weren't very good. They've been really hot lately. And you get the Giants, who have been
lost seven in a row going into this game.
Yeah. And here they are, and they're 1-3 on this road trip. The pitching has not been good by any standard. And they're losing ground in the wild card race. Now, they're still 3.5 games ahead of Milwaukee.
But they're now in third place.
But yeah,
behind San Diego.
San Diego's up a half game, and they were two games ahead of the Padres not too long ago.
And they come home. They've got some games here. Atlanta comes here, I think, mid-month, and they go to Atlanta as well.
Yes, yeah. So, look, I mean, there's no other way to frame it, Rob. It's put up or shut up time here. And if they don't, if something were to happen where they fall out of the playoff picture and don't make it, it would be the worst outcome of any that we've seen over the last few years since they became competitive again.
All right. So does Rob Thompson keep his job if they don't make the playoffs? Because everybody said they should have signed him immediately after they went on that 9-game win streak, I guess it was.
Yeah, because we can't allow a full baseball season to play out.
No, of course not. We have to react after every game.
Exactly. It's one of the things that I know I sound like a really old, crotchety guy here, but it's one of the things that I really dislike about sports coverage now is that we treat every single small moment, whether we're talking about a play, an at-bat, a game, as if it is the be-all and end-all and reveals everything. And you need to take a step back often and just see the bigger picture, and we don't do that often enough.
Well, that's part of Sports Talk Radio, so we provide a forum for this.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly
event
right.
About stuff like this, which is good. All right, so the Eagles start in Detroit on September 11th, a week from today. And I've been hearing a lot of people praising Howie Roseman for all the moves they made this week, the cuts and all that, the pickups, the guy they traded for, the safety they traded for, the guy they traded. Does he deserve as much grief for drafting Jalen Reagor as he does praise for trading for him?
Yeah, look, Howie's very good at erasing the mistakes that he makes. He really is. And in fairness to him, if you look at how the Eagles have drafted over the last few years, he's acquitted himself pretty well. I mean, you're talking about Jordan Mailata. You're talking about Dallas Goedert, Avante Maddox. You know, there have been Devontae Smith. You know, the perception that Howie misses an old, can't draft and can't find talent isn't entirely accurate. The flip side of that, of course, is that when he does miss, it's a fairly significant miss. And Jalen Reagor was one, especially because Justin Jefferson went immediately afterwards. So, look, you know, people acted like Jalen Reagor walked the streets of Philadelphia punching babies in the face. And he just wasn't, he just shouldn't have been a first-round draft pick. That's all there is to it. They got something for him. That's great. It doesn't mean he was a smart draft pick to begin with.
Well, one of the things that always annoyed me about the Andy Reid era with Joe Banner and all those other people that were involved there was when they would say, well, we just filled a need by drafting a guy. Well, you just created a need by cutting a guy or drafting a guy that wasn't very good, so you had to fill a need. Don't praise yourself for filling a need after you created one.
Yeah, and the other thing is don't necessarily think that you filled a need simply by drafting a player.
Right?
Like a couple of years ago, they trade up to go after and get Andre Dillard. And as it turns out, Andre Dillard, while not a bad player, you know, obviously broke his arm and is not going to be available for a while, but he's not their starting left tackle, and he's a guy that they moved up to get. But you watch a coverage of an NFL draft, whether you're talking about like the national perspective or if you hone in on your team that you care about, we give these draft grades as if they mean something, and they never do, because you don't know how these players are actually going to perform once they get to the National Football League.
Well, we live in an age of instant gratification.
Yeah.
Where we have to know right away
we're
doing.
Look, the most significant NFL player of the last, 30, 40 years was the 199th pick in the 2000 draft.
And he only got a job because the other guy got injured.
Right. Yeah. So what are we talking about here? In fairness to the Eagles, look, they do have a really good young core. They filled whatever holes on paper needed to be filled this past offseason. I think it's totally reasonable to have high expectations for them as a 11-12 win team. Let's see what the quarterback does with these weapons. Let's see what the defensive coordinator does with more talent on that side of the ball. Let's see how Nick Sirianni adjusts to teams and opposing head coaches adjusting to him based on his first season.
Right. Should they have waited to trade Rager, or did they trade him at the right time? Waited during the season for somebody to...
That's fine. Yeah. Look, I don't know what role he was going to fill. Presumably he was going to return punts for them, I guess.
Which he wasn't very good at.
Right. And, I'm kind of an outside-the-box thinker when it comes to certain aspects of special teams. If I were the Eagles, I wouldn't put a punt returner out there. You don't have somebody like a DeSean Jackson, or if you remember Dante Hall with the Kansas City Chiefs, who was a danger to, number one, was a danger to score a touchdown every time he touched the ball.
How about Darren Sproles?
Darren Sproles, perfect example of that kind of guy, but also the kind of guy who does something else that is really valuable, right? DeSean Watson was an elite deep receiver. Dante Hall played wide receiver. Darren Sproles was a running back and a receiver out of the backfield. The Eagles don't have anybody like that on their roster. So it didn't make sense to keep Rager just to be a punt returner. You're burning a roster spot on a guy who does this niche thing that you don't necessarily need.
I mean, what is your position on Devin Allen, who I find him intriguing because he's obviously a world-class hurdler. He would have been world champ had they let him run.
Yeah.
And he made the most spectacular play of the preseason. Two spectacular plays. One on one catch in a football against third stringers, and the other was on special teams.
Yeah, look, we always get intrigued. I joked on social media the other day that they ought to give a Billy Hess Memorial Award. For those of you longtime Eagles fans, you remember Billy Hess.
Went to Westchester,
had an incredible training camp in preseason with the Eagles in the late 80s, became this darling of, hey, is he going to make the team? And he didn't make the team and I think lives in the Lehigh Valley now, but we fall in love with these kind of receivers, whether it's Paul Turner or Hank Baskett or people like that. They become kind of...
Gizmo Williams.
Gizmo, folk heroes.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great
poll. That's another one. Yeah.
But Devin Allen is not going to be... I mean, he might be a gunner on special teams. He's also 27 years old and hadn't played football in 6 years. So you can look at it in one of two ways. You can say, well, okay, give him a chance and he'll get accustomed to playing football again, or are you really going to use a roster spot on a guy who hasn't played football in 6 years?
He looks like he can play, though.
Maybe a little bit.
Most of the track guys are just like guys that run up and down. He looks like he actually wouldn't mind contact.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's true. Like I said, I think he was an interesting story to people because of his background and because what he was trying to do was so unorthodox. But is this season going to come down to Devin Allen? No, it's going to come down to whether Jalen Hurts can get the ball to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and, take the step forward that the Eagles need him to take if they're going to compete for a Super Bowl.
All right, back to Howie. Can we wait and see whether all the pieces fit on offense and defense before we say what a great job he did?
Absolutely.
We have to say now that,
no.
Oh, Howie's tremendous.
No, we don't have to say anything now. I think one of the interesting ways to look at this is that if you're Jonathan Gannon, if you're the defensive coordinator, I know it's a big topic of conversation on this station, how good is Gannon really? And is he playing such conservative coverages and schemes last season because that's what he's naturally inclined to do? Or is it because That was the personnel he had. And so when you can't generate a pass rush, once Brandon Graham tears his Achilles, you have your safeties standing in the Jetro lot so that nobody, so that they keep everybody in front of them. I get that.
The Jetro lot? That's
you know,
that's outside the stadium.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, you know, nobody's going to get behind the Eagles safeties because they're that far back. But that's not the situation now. You've added Hassan Reddick. You've added defensive backs. You signed Kazir White. You drafted N'Kobe Dean. There's more depth defensively. So Howie and the front office, in a way, have kind of insulated themselves from the criticism that, well, you're not giving your defensive coordinator anything to work with. The other side of that, if you're Gannon and it doesn't go well, is you can say, well, I'm trying to assimilate all these different pieces quickly. You know, we were talking earlier about remembering previous Phillies disasters and you know, teams that fell apart. I think everybody who doesn't have short-term memory loss around here remembers the Dream Team in 2011 and the idea that, you know, the Eagles went out and signed all these guys in the wake of the NFL lockout and Nnamdi Asamoah and Dominic Rogers Cromartie and Jason Babin, and this is going to be awesome.
And Vince Young was the guy that said Dream Team.
Right, and it did not work even a little bit. And so, you know, I'm somebody, it sounds like you are too, Rob, where you just kind of, yeah, let's wait and see. Let's just hold the phone. On paper, they should be really good, but paper doesn't matter much.
What was the record of the Dream Team? Do you remember?
In 2011, they went 8-8.
8-8.
And then the following year, 2012, they went 4-12.
I think they were 3-1 and then lost 11-12.
Yeah.
And the one game they won, I think, was Nick Foles throwing a touchdown pass.
In Tampa.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay. The legend was born that day.
And who knew that Nick Foles would be the savior 8 years later, or
hey,
4 or 5 years later, whatever it was.
You're talking to the guy who, in December of 2017, I was at the Coliseum in Los Angeles when Carson Wentz tore his knee up. And the column I wrote that day was, well, there goes the Eagles season because they just lost the prospective MVP and their most important player. So it was nice while it lasted, but you know, so much for those Super Bowl dreams.
Well, my theory was they could get to the Super Bowl because mm-hmm. Because the competition in the NFC wasn't as great. Nick Foles could step up when he needed to, but they couldn't win.
Well, I mean, nobody thought that. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think the general consensus was that they were going to have a tough time with
this
Tom Brady
fate.
And Bill Belichick.
This is our fate. We finally get a team that can play, and mm-hmm. then this happens.
Yeah, but the flip side of that again was, you know, the Eagles all season had been wired to be the kind of team that would beat the Patriots because they had conditioned themselves to perform well in the situations that a team needs to perform well in to beat Brady and Belichick. I'll never forget after having covered that Super Bowl and then watching the NFL Films replay of it. And there's this amazing clip that NFL Films got from the Patriots sideline of James White, the running back. When the Eagles are going to go for it on fourth and goal and they're about to run the Philly special, James White can't believe that they're going for it. He just can't get over this. And then, of course, Trey Burton throws the touchdown pass to Nick Foles, and James White's just incredulous. He can't believe this. And I always chuckle when I see that because anybody who would watch the Eagles for any significant length of time that season was not surprised that they would go for it in that situation. They had done it all year. It was old hat to them. And so that, to me, was a big reason why they won that Super Bowl, was that they were ready for the positions they needed to put themselves in to win that game.
It's a lot more pleasant than the last time the Eagles played the Patriots in the Super Bowl when the sideline thing with Bill Belichick is, wait a minute, are we ahead?
Yeah, yeah.
Because couldn't figure out why the Eagles were moving so slow.
Right, and a really good contrast in that the Eagles came out like gangbusters in that game. Even though it was 7-7 at halftime, they really dominated the first half from a you know, play standpoint. And ended up gassed in the second half. And part of that was because they were so pumped at the start of the game. You know, Andy Reid talked about this later, and Belichick has talked about this in the years since, that they kind of burned off all their energy too fast. And the Patriots, having been there before, knew how to handle the buildup, the long halftime, all of that kind of stuff. And then one could also make an argument that the Patriots were cheating, too. So
I think some Eagles have still made that argument
that they're
cheating. All right, when we come back, I want to ask you a couple questions, an age-old question about whether Well, I'll wait till we come back about that. And another question about philosophy, which you discussed on the you were asked this on the morning show a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I ended up reading from Descartes and Kant and Nietzsche.
Yes, yes. We're going to get into a couple questions when we come back. Our number is 215-592-9494. Rob Cherry in for Glenn Macnow with Mike Sielski. WIP Sports Time is 1041. 215-592-9494. Our number is Rob Cherry in for Glenn Macnow with Mike Sielski on a Saturday morning, Labor Day weekend. Used to be they started football season Labor Day weekend.
They started football season Thursday night, I think.
Yeah, before Labor Day.
Yeah, yeah. School starts before Labor Day in a lot of places now, too.
The whole school before Labor Day here, I don't understand. Other places, I know it's been happening for years.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it. For one thing, my kids are not going to have a full week of school, I think, the first 3 weeks of the semester. It's either going to be 4 days, because of either Labor Day, Jewish holidays, things like that. So, and it just feels like the summer is so much shorter.
So did you like the Labor Day weekend opening of football season? I assume they moved it back because some people were still on vacation. They wanted to get the maximum viewership.
Yeah, I feel like Labor Day is supposed to be the end of the summer. Boom, that's it. Now we're making the transition to the fall. This is, honest to God, my favorite time of the year. Once the weather starts to get a little cooler, I still feel like I'm going to be going to classes somewhere, whether at LaSalle.
And you look forward to going to classes?
I did.
See, I hated the fall because it was the end of the summer. Now, since I've worked here 30-some years, I love it because football season is the best time to be here.
Yeah, and I'll be up front. I was a nerd in school. I liked school. I liked going back. And it was also, the beginning of football season, the end of baseball season. Are the Phillies in any sort of a playoff race, before you know it, the Flyers and Sixers will be starting. And that I always feel like September is actually the real new year, as opposed to January.
All right, it's good to get a couple of phone calls in here. Neil in the Northeast, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, Mike. Well, definitely New England with the 511 yards of offense in the Super Bowl. That was a back-and-forth game, one of the best in Super Bowl history.
Yes, it was. I was there. I had I had to file a column within 5 minutes of the game's end, and I had basically three-quarters of a column written about how the Eagles had won the game, and Alshon Jeffrey had guaranteed they were going to win, and they had fulfilled his promise, and then Brady drove the Patriots to a go-ahead touchdown with, six, 7 minutes left.
Yeah. Right.
And I was dying a thousand deaths in the press box, not because, I wanted the Eagles to win because I was a fan or something. I wanted the Eagles to win so that my column would hold up and I wouldn't have to rewrite the whole thing in 5 minutes. So thank goodness for Zach Ertz and Brandon Graham.
Yeah. Brandon ran script, and even Brady's ball at the end, for finally being incomplete, like last play of the game.
Yep. Do you have a question, Neil?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like, like Howie's moves, like that. And I think Rager, to get a couple draft picks for him, I'm glad that they happened. And I think it's intriguing, like Allen and Kane, they have like depth on the practice squad just in case anything happens to receivers. I'm wondering who you think does the returns, maybe in kickoffs or punt returns?
Do they
try Boston Scott like on punt returns, and maybe Dez for kickoffs?
Well, here's what
Quez Watkins.
Yeah, Quez. Here's what I think. The kickoff is, pardon me, it's an easier thing to handle. It is a little bit easier to be a kickoff returner than it is to be a punt returner. I think they're going to end up signing somebody probably to return punts. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't see anybody on the roster now who jumps out. And when I was there on Thursday, when Nick Sirianni was asked about this, and he didn't even give a name. He didn't suggest anybody. As I kind of hinted at with you earlier, Rob, I would not put back anyone to return punts. I think unless you have somebody who is incredibly great at
just let it bounce?
Just let it bounce.
Not even a fair catch?
Did you see the movie Moneyball?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a scene in there where Brad Pitt / Billy Bean is talking about, he's talking to his players on the Oakland A's, and he says, when the other team lays down a sacrifice bunt, just pick up the ball and throw it to first base. Don't try to be a hero. They're giving you an out. Take it. I feel that way about returning punts. Again, unless you have DeSean Jackson, the other team is giving you the ball back. Just take it.
Let it bounce.
Let it bounce.
Even if it goes 20 yards or 30 yards.
Let it bounce. Because, as we saw, for instance, last year in the playoff loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there is a lot that can go wrong on those situations. And unless you have a player who is a difference maker in that role, and the Eagles do not, just take the ball back whenever the other team wants to give it
to you. Has anybody in the history of the NFL ever not had a punt returner? Just let it bounce.
I covered a game when I was working in New York back in 2013. I was covering the Jets at the time, and the Jets played up in Foxborough.
Well, of course the Jets would do that.
Well, it was a strategic thing because the conditions that night, it was a very rainy night in Foxborough. And the Jets, similar to the Eagles, didn't really have a guy who was a clear-cut, terrific punt returner. So they didn't have anybody back there, and they tried to block a punt every time the Patriots got to fourth down and were going to kick the ball away. They didn't block a punt, but it didn't hurt them either. And I think this is one of those things in sports where it's like, well, we've always done it this way. We've always had a punt returner, so why would we change that? Well, maybe there's a reason to change it. Think outside the box a little bit.
Well, the Jets aren't the organization I would follow, though, for something.
No,
like that.
But it didn't kill them in that game. It didn't hurt them in that game.
They didn't win, though, did they?
They lost like 13-10, something like that. And look, I get it. Like, I remember where I was when DeSean Jackson pulled off the miracle of the Meadowlands 2 as well. And that was an amazing moment. But given
wasn't
the...
Wasn't that 3? Wasn't Westbrook's 2?
You're right. It was three. I was at Westbrook's as well, which was also a punt return. So I understand where people are coming from with like, oh, you wouldn't have those great plays if you didn't have a returner back there. But the Eagles don't have a Brian Westbrook or a DeSean Jackson. So make the best with what you got.
Scott in Florida, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, fellas. Mike, I was interested when you said, oh, goodness, when Carson got hurt. And I called up. I went to Harrington, but then I went out. I'd never been west of Hershey, and I ended up at University of Arizona. So I've always been an Arizona fan, but I'm from Philadelphia, so I've always been a Philly fan. And I called up Howard, and I said, hey, Nick Foles just got his Christmas present early. And Howard, like, poo-pooed it, like, you know, you're out of your friggin' mind, you know. And so anyway, it did turn out, and I have to say, I was elated, but I do feel that Super Bowl was the perfect storm. Because a few things had happened leading into it, made it so that one day Nick had his best game ever.
Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that is the perfect Philadelphia sports moment. I think the fact that it was Nick Foles, the fact that it's the backup quarterback coming in there to beat the best quarterback of all time and the best coach of all time, I don't know that will ever be topped in terms of if you wanted a Philadelphia team to win a championship, that is the way you would want a team to win
Doug
a championship.
Doug Peterson outsmarting Bill Belichick.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah, I think your point is well taken. As far as Howard goes, he is inscrutable. So, you know. There's no telling what he's going to say or how he's going to come down on something.
Yeah. This year's team, though, I must say a few things I've noticed, one of which is Fletcher Cox seems more upbeat. I don't know. He even looks thinner to me. But, you know, there's just the whole chemistry in there with adding a few young people into the defense, I think, and then Brandon getting back and stuff like that. I'm very optimistic, and they all, the other thing I think is, and they don't have to be this way, but they all really respect Hurts, and they're not dummies, so they have to respect him for a reason. So we just got to wait. We can talk about it all we want to, but fortunately next week the proof will be in the pudding, and I'm looking forward to a lot of positive things happening.
Thanks for the call, Scott. I'm really intrigued about this season. And Hurts, to me, is a really interesting case study in the value of a quarterback in the modern NFL. I've said this before, that if this were like 1989 or 1991, there would be very few people saying, well, of course, you know, the Eagles should move on from Jalen Hurts, right? Because back then, I think we placed... Those of us who followed football placed a greater emphasis on the leadership qualities of a quarterback. Now, because of the salary cap and fantasy sports, there's so much more of a discussion around the quarterback's physical attributes. Can he make all the throws? Does he throw in rhythm? We get very technical in terms of how we're evaluating a quarterback. And on some of those qualities, Jalen Hurts is not up to, or at least hasn't shown that he's up to, a Patrick Mahomes, a Justin Herbert, a Josh Allen, an Aaron Rodgers, the very, very best in the NFL. And it's really going to be a difficult question, I think, for the Eagles to answer, because they're going to have to make a decision at some point whether to pay Jalen Hurts a lot of money to keep him here or to potentially move on if he's not quite as good as they would hope he would be.
Right. The Eagles quarterback back then, 1990, was Randall Cunningham,
yeah,
who was not a prototypical quarterback in that he ran. I think he ran for 947 yards, something like that season.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
And passed for 30-some touchdowns.
Right, but Randall at the time, I mean, he was the NFL MVP one year. He was a spectacular player at quarterback. I think to Scott's point, Hurts has the intangibles, you know, and then some in what you would want as a quarterback. The question is, now that he's got better weapons around him, whether you're talking about A.J. Brown, you know, Devontae Smith in his second season, Dallas Goedert, can he do all the things that a quarterback in the modern NFL needs to be able to do physically to help his team win games?
But would you say Randall had leadership qualities?
Not as much as Hurts. No.
And that's what I think. That's what separates Hurts, and that's why Hurts has perhaps a higher ceiling. Although I thought Randall was the best Eagle quarterback ever, in my opinion. Hurts has a high ceiling because he's got all this other stuff. He just has to work on his arm and his throwing.
Yeah, it's that to me is the whole key. You know, is he going to throw with anticipation? You go back to that, pardon me, that Tampa game, and I think we've all seen that replay where there's the interception that Hurts throws late in the first half, where Devontae Smith breaks open and is wide open.
Right.
And Hurts is a second late getting rid of the ball, and it allows the safety to come over and pick the pass off. You can't make that throw this year because the expectations are too high. The weapons are too talented. The offensive line is there. The defense is better. If they're losing games or not playing as well as they could because of Jalen Hurts, they're not going to make a change this season, but they're positioned where they could after this season.
I think they audition players every year in the NFL, even if they have long-term contracts, just the way it is. I think Hurts especially is auditioning for his job again for the second straight year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. And he, to his credit, dismisses those questions, which is what someone in his position ought to do. But it doesn't mean that those questions go away.
But he seems like he's mentally strong, that stuff really doesn't bother
him. No.
He's not just saying that.
No, I think that's true. His teammates are unflagging in their support to the point that I wonder if Nick Sirianni in particular maybe goes overboard a little bit. But they like him and respect him. There's no doubt about that.
All right, I didn't get a chance to ask you the two questions. We got a break here, so we'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour, which will also feature this day in Eagle history, because something very interesting happened on this day in Eagle history.
You're going to have to demystify me.
Just a few years ago. What we're watching.
Yes.
You have something you're watching.
I have a good local tie-in to what we're watching.
All right. 215-592-9494. WIP Sports Time, 1059.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
215-592-9494. Our number's Rob Cherry in for Glenn Mack now with Mike Sielski on a Saturday morning, Labor Day weekend. Used to be they started football season Labor Day weekend.
They started football season Thursday night, I think.
Yeah, before Labor Day.
Yeah, yeah. School starts before Labor Day in a lot of places now, too.
The whole school before Labor Day here, I don't understand. Other places I know it's been happening for years.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it. For one thing, my kids are not going to have a full week of school, I think, the first 3 weeks of the semester. It's either going to be 4 days, because of either Labor Day, Jewish holidays, things like that. So, and it just feels like the summer is so much shorter.
So did you like the Labor Day weekend opening of football season? I assume they moved it back because some people were still on vacation. They wanted to get the maximum viewership.
Yeah, I feel like Labor Day is supposed to be the end of the summer. Boom, that's it. Now we're making the transition to the fall. This is, honest to God, my favorite time of the year. Once the weather starts to get a little cooler, I still feel like I'm going to be going to classes somewhere, whether at LaSalle.
And you look forward to going to classes?
I did.
See, I hated the fall because it was the end of the summer. Now, since I've worked here 30-some years, I love it because football season's the best time to be here.
Yeah, and I'll be up front. I was a nerd in school. I liked school. I liked going back. And it was also, the beginning of football season, the end of baseball season. Are the Phillies in any sort of a playoff race? Before you know it, the Flyers and Sixers will be starting. And that I always feel like September is actually the real new year as opposed to January.
Well, it's good to get a couple of phone calls in here. Neil in the Northeast, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, Mike. Well, definitely New England with the 511 yards of offense in the Super Bowl. That was a back and forth game, one of the best in Super Bowl history.
Yes, it was. I was there. I had I had to file a column within 5 minutes of the game's end, and I had basically three quarters of a column written about how the Eagles had won the game and Alshon Jeffrey had guaranteed they were going to win and they had fulfilled his promise. And then Brady drove the Patriots to that go-ahead touchdown with, 6-7 minutes left.
Yeah. Right.
And I was dying 1,000 deaths in the press box, not because, I wanted the Eagles to win because I was a fan or something. I wanted the Eagles to win so that my column would hold up and I wouldn't have to rewrite the whole thing in five minutes. So thank goodness for Zach Ertz and Brandon Graham.
Yeah, Brandon ran script, and even Brady's ball at the end, for finally being incomplete, like the last play of the game.
Yep. Do you have a question, Neil?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like, Howie's moves, like that, and I think Rager, get a couple of draft picks for him, I'm glad that they, happened, and I think maybe, it's intriguing, like Allen and Kane, they have like depth on the practice squad just in case anything happens to receivers. I'm wondering who you think does the returns maybe in kickoffs or punt returns.
I think
they try Boston Scott like on punt returns and maybe Dez for kickoffs?
Well, here's what
Quez what?
Yeah, Quez. Here's what I think. The kickoff is... Pardon me, it's an easier thing to handle. It is a little bit easier to be a kickoff returner than it is to be a punt returner. I think they're going to end up signing somebody probably to return punts. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't see anybody on the roster now who jumps out. And when I was there on Thursday when Nick Sirianni was asked about this, and he didn't even give a name. He didn't suggest anybody. As I kind of hinted at with you earlier, Rob, I would not put back anyone to return punts. I think unless you have somebody who is incredibly great at it.
Just let it bounce?
Just let it bounce.
Not even a fair catch?
Did you see the movie Moneyball?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a scene in there where Brad Pitt slash Billy Bean is talking about, he's talking to his players on the Oakland A's. And he says, when the other team lays down a sacrifice bunt, just pick up the ball and throw it to first base. Don't try to be a hero. They're giving you an out. Take it. I feel that way about returning punts. Again, unless you have DeSean Jackson, the other team is giving you the ball back. Just take it.
Let it bounce.
Let it bounce.
Even if it goes 20 yards or 30 yards.
Let it bounce. Because as we saw, for instance, last year in the playoff loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there is a lot that can go wrong on those situations. And unless you have a player who is a difference maker in that role, and the Eagles do not, just take the ball back whenever the other team wants to give it
to
you.
Has anybody in the history of the NFL ever not had a punt returner? Just let it bounce.
I covered a game when I was working in New York back in 2013. I was covering the Jets at the time, and the Jets played up
in
Foxborough.
Well, of course the Jets would do that.
Well, it was a strategic thing because right. The conditions that night, it was a very rainy night in Foxborough, and the Jets, similar to the Eagles, didn't really have a guy who was a clear-cut, terrific punt returner. So they didn't have anybody back there, and they tried to block a punt every time the Patriots got the fourth down and were going to kick the ball away. They didn't block a punt, but it didn't hurt them either. And I think this is one of those things in sports where it's like, well, we've always done it this way. We've always had a punt returner. So why would we change that? Well, maybe there's a reason to change it. Think outside the box a little bit.
Well, the Jets aren't the organization I would follow, though, for something.
No,
like that.
But it didn't kill them in that game. It didn't hurt them in that game.
They didn't win, though, did they?
They lost like 13-10, something like that. And look, I get it. Like, I remember where I was when DeSean Jackson pulled off the miracle of the Meadowlands 2 as well. And that was an amazing moment. But given
wasn't
the...
Wasn't that 3? Wasn't Westbrook's 2?
You're right. It was three. I was at Westbrook's as well, which was also a punt return. So I understand where people are coming from with like, oh, you wouldn't have those great plays if you didn't have a returner back there. But the Eagles don't have a Brian Westbrook or a DeSean Jackson. So make the best with what you got.
Scott in Florida, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, fellas. Mike, I was interested when you said, oh, goodness, when Carson got hurt. And I called up. I went to Harrington, but then I went out. I'd never been west of Hershey, and I ended up at University of Arizona. So I've always been an Arizona fan, but I'm from Philadelphia, so I've always been a Philly fan. And I called up Howard, and I said, hey, Nick Foles just got his Christmas present early. And Howard, like, poo-pooed it, like, you know, you're out of your friggin' mind, you know. And so anyway, it did turn out, and I have to say, I was elated, but I do feel that Super Bowl was the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. As a few things had happened leading into it, made it so that one day Nick had his best game ever.
Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that is the perfect Philadelphia sports moment. I think the fact that it was Nick Foles, the fact that it's the backup quarterback coming in there to beat the best quarterback of all time and the best coach of all time, I don't know that will ever be topped in terms of if you wanted a Philadelphia team to win a championship, that is the way you would want a team to win
Doug
a championship.
Doug Peterson outsmarting Bill Belichick.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I think your point is well taken. As far as Howard goes, he is inscrutable. So, there's no telling what he's going to say or how he's going to come down on something.
Yeah. This year's team, though, I must say a few things I've noticed, one of which is Fletcher Cox seems more upbeat. I don't know. He looks thinner to me. But, there's just the whole chemistry in there with adding a few young people into the defense, I think, and then Brandon getting back and stuff like that. I'm very optimistic. The other thing I think is, and they don't have to be this way, but they all really respect Hurts, and they're not dummies, so they have to respect him for a reason. So we just got to wait. We can talk about it all we want to, but fortunately, next week, the proof will be in the pudding, and I'm looking forward to a lot of positive things happening.
thanks for the call, Scott. I'm really intrigued about this season. And Hurts, to me, is a really interesting case study in the value of a quarterback in the modern NFL. I've said this before, that if this were like 1989 or 1991, there would be very few people saying, well, of course, you know, the Eagles should move on from Jalen Hurts, right? Because back then, I think we placed, those of us who followed football, placed a greater emphasis on the leadership qualities of a quarterback. Now, because of the salary cap and fantasy sports, there's so much more of a discussion around the quarterback's physical attributes. Can he make all the throws? Does he throw in rhythm? We get very technical in terms of how we're evaluating a quarterback. And on some of those qualities, Jalen Hurts is not up to, or at least hasn't shown that he's up to, a Patrick Mahomes, a Justin Herbert, a Josh Allen, an Aaron Rodgers, the very, very best in the NFL. And it's really going to be a difficult question, I think, for the Eagles to answer, because they're going to have to make a decision at some point whether to pay Jalen Hurts a lot of money to keep him here or to potentially move on if he's not quite as good as they would hope he would be.
Right. The Eagles quarterback back then, 1990, was Randall Cunningham,
yeah,
who was not a prototypical quarterback in that he ran. I think he ran for 947 yards, something like that season.
Yeah, yeah, something
and
like
passed
that.
Passed for 30-some touchdowns.
Right, but Randall at the time, I mean, he was the NFL MVP one yeah. year. He was a spectacular player at quarterback. I think to Scott's point, Hurts has the intangibles, you know, and then some in what you would want as a quarterback. The question is, now that he's got better weapons around him, whether you're talking about A.J. Brown, you know, Devontae Smith in his second season, Dallas Goedert, can he do all the things that a quarterback in the modern NFL needs to be able to do physically to help his team win games?
But would you say Randall had leadership qualities?
Not as much as Hurts. No.
And that's what I think. That's what separates Hurts, and what that's why Hurts has perhaps a higher ceiling. Although I thought Randall was the best Eagle quarterback ever, in my opinion. Hurts has a high ceiling because he's got all this other stuff. He just has to work on his arm and his throwing.
Yeah, that to me is the whole key. You know, is he going to throw with anticipation? You go back to that. Pardon me, that Tampa game. And I think we've all seen that replay where there's the interception that Hurts throws late in the first half, where Devontae Smith breaks open and is wide open.
Right.
And Hurts is a second late getting rid of the ball, and it allows the safety to come over and pick the pass off. You can't make that throw this year because the expectations are too high. The weapons are too talented. The offensive line is there. The defense is better. If they're losing games or not playing as well as they could because of Jalen Hurts, they're not going to make a change this season, but they're positioned where they could after this season.
I think they audition players every year in the NFL, even if they have long-term contracts, just the way it is. I think Hurts especially is auditioning for his job again for the second straight year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. And he, to his credit, dismisses those questions, which is what someone in his position ought to do. But it doesn't mean that those questions go away.
But he seems like he's mentally strong, that stuff really doesn't bother him.
No.
He's not just saying that.
No, I think that's true. His teammates are unflagging in their support to the point that I wonder if Nick Sirianni in particular maybe goes overboard a little bit. But they like him and respect him. There's no doubt about that.
All right. I didn't get a chance to ask you the two questions. We got a break here. So we'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour, which will also feature this day in Eagle history, because something very interesting happened on this day in Eagle history.
You're going to have to demystify me.
Just a few years ago. Also, what we're watching.
Yes.
You have something you're watching.
I have a good local tie-in to what we're watching.
215-592-9494. WIP Sports Time, 1059.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.